I'm going to spend half of my talk just reviewing some issues of what is called infinite volume extra dimensions. And this is a material which is already published based on original work we did with Ghiadvalli and Massimo Porati, and subsequent developments mostly with Ghiadvalli. And then the second half, I'll talk about the cosmological constant problem, which we argue that can be solved in this type of models, and this is still work in progress, which we are doing with Ghiadvalli and Misha Schiffman. Okay. Let me just mention that the conventional finite volume extra dimensions, this already includes the what we call large extra dimensions, allows us to modify physics in ultraviolet region. So we have lots of new phenomena to study there, as in phenomenology as well as in early cosmology, for instance. On the other hand, the infrared region, or the low energy description of those theories, is just identical to four-dimensional theory. Of course, that's a good news because we match to what we observe in our four-dimensional world. On the other hand, if we think of late time cosmology or the cosmological constant problem, which is the problem of the low energy theory, then probably in this kind of models we should expect the same difficulties as we have in just conventional four-dimensional theories. In contrast with this, the models which have infinite volume extra dimensions, they predict modification of gravity at very, very large scales, like the present-day Hubble scale, for instance. That means that in infrared, the laws of gravity are changed, and already at that point, that indicates that these models can be relevant to the late-time cosmology and to, in particular, to the cosmological constant problem. So here are some, just to set the notations. We'll be working in d-dimensional space-time, where 4 stands for our 3 plus 1, and n is number of extra dimensions. And we're saying that the M star is the fundamental scale of gravity in this higher dimensional theory. That means that at M star, classical approximation to theory of gravity breaks down. And we'll see in particular how it breaks down. Now, the finite volume extra dimensions are called all the models in which four-dimensional M Planck is related to this higher dimensional scale or five-dimensional M Planck and the volume of the compactification. And the examples, of course, are the standard KK compactification, and of course the Randall-Sundrum warping is also the example of this, because the volume is finite and that finite volume gives rise to four-dimensional M Planck in that sense. What will be outer here are the models in which M Planck does not equal to this. So this relation is not present. And this is very crucial, as we'll see, for all kinds of issues we'd like to address. And namely, in those kind of models, we can take Vm goes to infinity and still have four-dimensional gravity in our world. So one of the benefits of these models is that it allows to have M star much, much smaller than TV. I'll specify exactly how small can it be, and what are the phenomenological constraints on that scale, and why this is a benefit for the theory to have very low M star. But before I do that, let me just okay. Let me go ahead and.
Are you going to explain that for me?
Which one? Yeah, this one, sure, yeah. That will be the purpose of the talk, one of the purposes of the talk, to explain that. So, let me, before I go to the next transparency, let me mention the main results of these two parts of my talk. As I've said, first part I'll be reviewing this infinite volume extra dimensions, and in the second part I'll come to the cosmological constant problem. So in the first part, I don't worry about the cosmological constant problem, just to, I'd like to study what is the four-dimensional gravity on a brain in a theory which has infinite volume extra dimension. So that means in the first part, I fine-tune cosmological constant for zero and study just gravitational interaction. And the result there will be that at distances between inverse M star and at some MP divided by M star square scale, we have a conventional 4D gravity. And above this scale and below this scale, four-dimensional gravity stops to exist. It changes the regime, and how it changes the regime we'll see later. And in the second part, we will introduce the four-dimensional cosmological constant, which I call epsilon 4, and I'll try to show that because this large distance gravity is modified, it's not anymore four-dimensional gravity at all. The relation between the acceleration rate and the four-dimensional energy density flips upside down compared to normal four-dimensional relations. And everywhere here n does not equal to 2, and here we deal with cases n bigger than 2. I mean, this relation is true. You can also work in five-dimensional case. I'll show that it's not conceptually important. And of course, this relation is true for epsilon much bigger than m star. So what happens is that for n bigger than 2, as we increase the energy density, the acceleration rate decreases. So that will be the ultimate goal to argue for that formula. But before I get there, I have to review how we get this, to answer Eva's question, how we get this four-dimensional gravity without having compact or finite size extra dimension. The main method which we use is the method of denormalization of the Einstein-Hilbert term due to loops. And that is known for a long time. And in order to demonstrate that feature, you don't need to go to brain world. You can do that in just conventional four-dimensional gravity. And next couple of transparencies, I'll be showing that on the example of conventional four-dimensional gravity, and then I'll use the same method in the brain world. So let's say we have four-dimensional space, and we have some theory of gravity, the scale of which is m star. So we regard this theory as just low-energy effective theory, as a derivative expansion, and in general, it can be infinite series of the terms. All here, this also includes derivatives, so I just didn't write it down, but all derivatives are there as well. So what is this theory? If we go to distances which are bigger than inverse m star, that means that I can forget about this higher derivative corrections. The Einstein-Hilbert term dominates, and we will just deduce normal Newtonian gravity, but with very, very wrong Newtonian constant, because there is m star in front of this instead of m Planck squared. And this constant is much, much bigger than g Newton. So it's like strong gravity. And of course, if we go to shorter distances, then this theory doesn't make any sense, because we have to take into account all the infinite number of terms. So it just effective field theory breaks down. However, the point is that the Einstein-Hilbert term is not stable under quantum corrections due to matter fields. It's similar to the Higgs mass term in the standard model. We put some three-level Higgs mass term, but it's not stable. It gets renormalization due to loops, and it runs up to the whatever UE cutoff you have in your theory. Exactly the same thing happens with this guy, so with the square root of G M star R. And that was, of course, known for a long time. And here is the example. So let's take the theory of gravity, and let's couple it to I'm going to be calling it standard model, but that means that this is any extension of standard model which goes to very, very high scale, which is denoted as MSM. Let's say you can think it's some gut scale after which standard model stops running because you have some kind of superconformal theory, let's say, about that scale. So that's a UV cutoff for your standard model fields. So we're coupling that theory of gravity with this particle theory. And then you can calculate loops which renormalize this term. So one of them is here. This is a graviton. And we always consider graviton, external lines of gravitons with momenta less than m star, because only in that region the theory of gravity makes sense. And so, as I said, it was known that this is renormalized. And as a result, you get the extra term in your action, which is let me call it m induced squared times, and then you have d4x square root of g and all kinds of operators. But the important one is the leading one, the Einstein-Hilbert term. And it was derived for the general expression for M induced was derived by Adler and Z in 80 or 81, maybe 80.
So is M yeah. star bigger than the standard model cutoff?
No. M star is going to be much, much less than standard model cutoff.
You'd only, as you said, you'd only cut off at M star, right? So why would you get?
No. You see, this is external momentum of the graviton. So I'm calculating for p less than m star, the field theory approximation to gravity is valid, right?
But you're letting the standard model stuff run at energies higher than
the Of course. Because the UV cutoff of the standard model is this one, not that one. So these are the loop momenta. They run as a field theory momenta up to the scale.
So do these look like black holes?
Not really. I mean, that's what I'm trying to prove, that these guys are not black holes. I mean, if you took that model, that classical model I wrote before, and if you said, okay, let me take a particle which has a mass which is bigger than M star, you'd say that that's a black hole, right? But here, what I'm showing is that the full quantum theory doesn't have that M star in front of the Einstein-Hilbert term. It has higher scale, so that's why it's not a black hole anymore.
If you consider gravity collection inside of
I'll come to that.
Then you would have.
I'll come to that. Yeah, I'll come to that.
So basically, we would have thought it was a big black hole, but the one loop quantum correction means that the gravity scale.
Gravity is screened. Yeah, gravity is or the these guys, these loops shield strong gravity and make it weak at distances bigger than 1 ohm star. That's right. Exactly.
But you have to make sure that mass square induces actually comes out positive.
That's right, yeah. So, right, the story is that in the perturbative levels, scalars and fermions contribute with a positive sign and the gauge bosons contribute with a negative sign. And our definition of this high scale standard will be,
what is your fundamental, Lagrangian? I mean, do you have a four-dimensional Einstein term in the fundamental Lagrangian?
Yes.
And its coefficient is
M star, but I'm trying to argue that that's fake. I'm trying to argue that eventually it gets renormalized, it becomes M Planck, while the higher derivative terms are still suppressed by M star, and that's a trick. Okay? So I'll show you in the next chapter what is the final Lagrangian.
So what we'll see, you always can say that this coefficient will normalize the observable quantity.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right. What you are gaining, right?
Well, what I'm gaining is that I like to make justification for a model in which I believe I have it in the next transparency.
You're saying we should now have gravitons with energies up to the new scale, not up to M star.
No. No.
Exactly.
Yeah. No.
So why?
Well, I'll show you.
Because it's like in analyzable theory, you get a new parameter there, and you're using analyzable parameters.
Right. So here is the final model, in which, actually, okay. In which the coefficient in front of the leading term is huge. And that defines my physical observable, which is M Planck, which I measure in Newtonian interactions. Okay? All what I wanted to argue that these terms, which are suppressed by M star, they remain, they don't go away.
So those spectrums are much bigger than they would be if you just started out.
Exactly. So,
so it's like starting out with gravity, with the Planck mass, but you're just adding some large higher derivative terms with large.
Exactly. Exactly. Precisely. Yes. Precisely. But I tried to justify that backward. I mean, because I wanted to, because that will be the situation which I'll encounter in brain world. Okay.
You are saying that at the level of the yield, you would be sensitive to these terms, right?
Right. Although when I go to distances which are shorter, which are bigger than inverse M star, I see normal four-dimensional gravity.
What do you do with the cosmological constant that you also?
Right. At, like I mentioned in the first part, I fine-tune it to zero, but eventually I have to explain this, right?
But this is not so surprising because, I mean, already it's a standard model exchange will produce these higher terms with 1 over right. Weak squared. So it's not surprising to have these higher terms with large coefficients.
Absolutely, yeah, sure, yeah.
With
M star coefficients.
Well, in the standard model, actually what you really have is from photon loops, you have R 1 over box to the, you have even more non-local things in the standard model.
So you're saying he's integrated out light things?
That's what you get from integrating things of mass and star.
You see, I take a little bit different philosophy. So suppose you had some theory of quantum gravity at that scale M star. So whatever you do, in integrating out those states of the quantum gravity, at low energy theory, you get terms like this. And I want to have a most general expression for that, right?
In some sense, by definition, the scale of quantum gravity is M Planck, because that's what suppresses the fluctuations of the metric. That comes from integrating out non-gravitational. The extra terms come from integrating out non-gravitational fields.
I mean, at large distances, that's true. But suppose I go at short distances.
Yeah.
Then these terms, yeah.
But suppose the world is purely QED plus Einstein, then
right.
It's M star.
No.
What's that?
If you say that you integrate out photon, you get 1 over box, but those effects can be taken into account just.
You want to say the graviton is the size of the graviton is still a star.
Yeah.
Well, in some sense, yeah. In some sense, yeah.
So there's a difference if scale is shorter than
this. Exactly, yeah.
Yes.
But that I had on the next transparency, so let me.
There's a problem with the sign. In general, you have to worry about the sign.
Yeah. Well,
what does the standard model predict?
Standard model is a positive sign. But you have to be careful. Whatever theory you define in UV, whatever, some Suzy Gut or whatever. So assumption is that Suzy Gut produces this coefficient with a positive sign, which is not weird assumption, because let's say standard model does that. And with the right magnitude, so that is a definition of M Planck. The M Planck is not a fundamental constant; it is derived constant.
But it's the biggest mass scale that
matters. It's the biggest mass scale that matters, exactly right. So some of the questions I'll be answering on next transparency, but I don't know if that's it. So I think I've said already what is written on this transparency, that M Planck is a derived quantity, and it is defined by this UV scale of the particle physics, and also the content of particle physics, namely how many particles we have there, et cetera, et cetera. So, I think I mentioned this already, that at distances bigger than 1 over M star, we forget these terms and we recover normal Newton's law. And at distances less than inverse M star, effective theory brings down, so we have to have some model for quantum gravity. And now, answer a question about the gravity loops, I think Arkady asked me. If we assume that above the scale of M star, the quantum gravity corrections are soft, then in this low energy theory, we can proceed in the following way. That means for the low energy practitioner, that means that I take M star as a cutoff of my theory. In any loop I write for the I draw for the graviton, I take M star as a UV cutoff and calculate with that, and that answer won't be far away from the answer which I would get in the full quantum theory. And that answer is still small, reason being that the coupling, which is defined by this term, is 1 over M Planck.
Why should those be soft?
No, that's an assumption that the quantum gravity.
I know, but why is that?
Let's say in string theory, in string theory, you get that.
So the string scale.
Right.
But
eventually,
if that was soft, wouldn't you expect that also to cut out that loop that gives you the large?
Not really. Because that comes from this different sector. Let's say in string theory, if you want to do string theory construction of that, if those states come from completely different sector, then that's not true. I don't want to make a claim that we have complete string theory construction of this, but I'll mention what kind of possible ideas might be in that direction. And I think you wanted to ask something about registates, but no? Okay. That's the impression I got. But so. Okay, if not, never mind.
You want a situation where you have a big fluffy graviton and little hard standard model particles.
Exactly, yeah.
And in string theory, your analogy is the little hard particles are d-brains and the big fluffy
exactly,
graviton
yeah.
is the
spring. Right.
And then you're going to say that the hard particle loops are not cut off at a low scale.
Right.
Scale is low.
Yes.
That's not true what we know about.
That's true because in that case you consider interaction of the open strings on a D-brain with the closed strings which have the same scale, right? So what I want to imagine is that standard model comes not from the open strings, which are ending on the deep brains. But let's say in some construction similar to little string theory, in which you have NF5 brains and T1 brains between them, which give you gauge group, okay? And of course I cannot use the normal open strings for describing standard model fields, because eventually I'm gonna take in any string construction very, very small G string. So if I was to use that, the standard model gauge coupling would be extremely small, and that doesn't make any sense, right?
In little string theory, everything has the same cutoff.
No. I'll come exactly to the example. I mean, you can have in that construction, you can have, let's say, the W boson, which the scale of which is not defined by the string scale, but is defined by string scale divided by G string and times then whatever separation you make between your NS5.
The W boson comes from a D brain. The photon comes from a string. When they're commensurate in energy, which is what you want.
That is a problem of one particular construction these guys had, and that's why I'm saying that we don't have exact construction because of that problem and some other problems. But eventually, the idea should be similar to that. That's what I'm saying. Okay. Yeah.
And you don't have a lot of little excitations of all the standard model particles from these 10 to the
last. Right. So
continuum.
No. That's right. That's the issue of register states. I was gonna answer. So I'll be happy to answer all those questions, because I have a number of transparencies on that. So if you let me proceed with this. So at the moment I'm doing bottom up construction. So M star to me is some UV cutoff for the gravity. And so let me now ask, what is the lower bound on M star? Just purely in phenomenology, without asking questions, how can I construct string theory like that? And that was addressed, first that was addressed by Ramasantham in 97, and he was basing his arguments on the submillimeter gravity measurements, which of course tell you that Newton's law should be valid at distances bigger than inverse M star, and the number there is 10 to the minus 3 eV. And he also pointed out that this has great benefit for the cosmological constant problem, because all the gravity loops you can then cut off at M star. So the contribution of the gravity loops to the cosmological constant is naturally small, consistent with the data. But of course, this doesn't answer any question about the contribution to the cosmological constant from the standard model, which I've said is still.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, this goes back to my question. I mean, he was assuming that if you had a composite gravity, that
yes.
there would be a soft form factor
yes.
to the coupling to even standard model fields.
So
the coupling suppress right. standard model fields.
Yeah.
And if that were true,
yes,
if that were true, that would also suppress your
yeah.
contribution to the Planck scale.
I think that assumption is not correct, and we can show that. Even if that happens, contribution to the cosmological constant from standard is still huge.
Yes.
And I'll be glad to discuss with you, because this is a separate issue. But I think I mentioned this to you once, but anyway. So then we analyzed in a given brain world model, which I'll discuss after this, we analyzed astrophysical, cosmological, and phenomenological bounds on this M star, and we also found that this bound satisfies all those constraints. And another question, of course, you can ask, what is the limited curvature for which Einstein-Hilbert approximation makes sense, for which you don't have to go, let's say, to theory of quantum gravity? And in that case, of course, is when R is smaller than M star squared. And if you translate that in energy, in terms of energy density, because you have this huge term in front of Einstein-Hilbert term, it translates into energy density is less or equal to average minimally average between M star and M Planck. Okay, so if you push limits and take the lowest value here, 10 to the minus 3, and then this number is TV, so it's still a huge number. And pretty much this kind of combinations enter in all those phenomenological discussions, and that's why it's safe. Now, as I mentioned, this was just four-dimensional model. It was meant to demonstrate the basic ideas, but this does not provide any modification of gravity in infrared. So in infrared, it's just normal four-dimensional gravity, and we are after for something else. And that's why let's go to brain world. And now we'd like to separate these scales geographically. So that means that we have some bulk, which is infinite, in a sense that volume is infinite. And there is a M star scale of gravity, M star here. That means that there is a whole power of these higher dimensional operators which are suppressed by M star here. And then there is a brain on which particle physics lives, and MSM is this high scale for that theory. And I'm going to be discussing the simplest possible model of that, which is five-dimensional, and which has this like orbifold fixed-point type brain, so it's not fluctuating. So I don't deal difficulties with these goldstones associated with the fluctuations, but all the consideration can be done in general case. So this is just to show you what.
Can you change brother reasons more than one extra dimension?
Yeah, of course. But the main physics which is going on here, I want to demonstrate on the simplest example. The physics in higher dimensions is similar except the problems associated with a cosmological constant problem. Okay, but the gravity will be the same, exactly the same. So that's a theory we would like to consider. And then I argued already that in four-dimensional theory, this term was induced, and now it also will be induced in exactly the same way. It will be also induced in this d-dimensional theory, but it will be induced only on the brain because this high-scale stuff is present only on the brain, not in the bulk. And let me write already, since we went through this four-dimensional example, let me write already the answer for that. So this is the action for the system. So this was the bulk Einstein-Hilbert term. G capital stands for the five-dimensional graviton. It's a Ricci scalar. And then we had on the brain, we had this matter sector with very, very high scale. And that matter sector produced for us this induced term. And G bar is just induced metric on the brain here. So the four-dimensional Ricci scalar is written in terms of the induced term, in terms of the induced metric, while this guy is written in terms of the original metric. And of course, the cosmological, I fine-tuned the cosmological constant because cosmological constant is also induced, as you mentioned, and I fine-tuned it to the tension with the brain so that I made it zero. But I'm going to leave that constraint later.
Right.
Yes?
I'm sorry, just probably rehashing something that's already discussed, but at this point, you've got M star gravity in the bulk and Santa Monica brain. And the Santa Monica particles can be as heavy as TV or whatever.
No, even heavier. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. From the point of view of the 10-dimensional gravity,
yes.
Then don't those look like black holes?
Yeah, good question. Yeah. On the brain, they don't look like a black hole because that goes back to Shamit's question. Because I've shown you that on the brain, the gravity is screened. Okay?
But I'm just saying, in the full theory,
you're
dealing with 10-dimensional black holes.
Sorry? No, not really. Because if you take that particle and take into the bulk, heavy particle, That is a black hole, because its mass is bigger than M star. But on the brain, they interact like normal particles. I'll show you that they interact like with normal four dimensional gravity, and they, to you and to me, they don't look like a black hole.
What's the 5D metric of one of these things, even if it's on the brain?
Right. It has this pancake type structure in the bulk. In the bulk, of course, it does. Because if you take it far away to infinity, it has to be a black hole.
So your brain but, is a black hole from the point of view of the 10-dimensional gravity?
In the bulk, yes.
Does it have a large entropy?
Yes, of course.
So it's a black hole out in the bulk, and now you bring it closer and closer to the brain. You're saying the horizon disappears at some distance?
Yes, exactly. Because the effective coupling of gravity decreases when you come closer and closer.
Well, there are two kinds of gravity even at the brain.
Exactly. So let me explain what is a gravity in this theory, and then probably these questions will be more clear.
You said that you showed it.
I have not shown that yet, so I'm coming to that. I wanna. Yes. I wanna study what is the gravity on the brain in this theory. Okay.
But I'm just asking, if you look at the second line.
This one?
Yeah.
Yes.
As far as 10-dimensional gravity goes, you're studying black holes. You're studying the dynamics of black holes.
No. If I was studying the E plus E minus annihilation in the bulk, yes, that would look like black holes. But since I'm living on the brain, where gravitational constant is much, much smaller than the gravitational constant in the bulk, those guys have weak gravity and interact like normal particles.
Why don't you show the
picture? Yeah, I'm trying to, but you know, I'm stuck to this transparency, so. okay, maybe, can I? So let me analyze this action and describe what is the gravity which it gives rise to. So you can do the exact calculation which you've done in terms of Green's functions or the KK modes, but you can also develop very simple intuitive picture why it works. Is because let me introduce the parameter, which is the ratio of the coefficients in front of the bulk term and the word volume term. M star cubed divided by M Planck squared has dimensionality of mass. So I'd like to argue that this term effectively acts like a graviton mass on the brain. So if this constant is very small, that means this RC is very, very big, then this looks like just completely four-dimensional gravity with normal four-dimensional Newton's constant. And that means that if M star is much, much smaller than M Planck, that should look like normal four-dimensional gravity, and vice versa. And that you can really calculate. So I'm going to present two different ways of understanding that issue. First is in terms of KK modes, and the second is in terms of the Green's function. So the KK modes, the picture with the KK modes goes as follows. So we know that if we had nothing on the brain, no induced term, nothing, we know that the sum of all KK modes have to give rise to five-dimensional gravity, because that's what it is. Its theory is five-dimensional. And let me calculate the potential between two sources on the brain. And that potential, in terms of these KK modes, that potential is the square of the wave function. These are the wave functions of the KK modes with given mass m, taken at the position of the brain, which is zero in this case. And each of them mediates Yukawa type interaction, which is e to the minus mr, and we have infinite number of them with no mass gap. So what happens now, this is standard decomposition. Now, what happens in conventional theory when we don't include the induced term? We can choose normalization of the KK modes so that psi m squared equals to 1. And then take this integral, and that gives you 1 over r squared. That's just five-dimensional answer. However, because of the presence of this induced term, it creates new potential to the KK modes. It looks like a potential for the KK modes, which makes the wave function suppressed on the brain compared to the standard case. So if you look at this expression for the wave function, for any KK mode, the mass of which is bigger than inverse RC, this is suppressed compared to that. And that cuts off some effects of five dimensionality and makes it looks four dimensional. Namely, let's see. All, effectively, you can argue in this way. The effective contributions to this integral come from the masses which are smaller than inverse r, because others are cut off by the exponent. And now let's go at distances which are bigger than rc. Then 1 over r is smaller than 1 over rc, and as a result, effective m's which contribute are smaller than 1 over rc, and they are not suppressed then. So that gives you 5D answer. So at distances bigger than RC, you get normal five-dimensional gravity. And vice versa, if you go to distances shorter than RC, 1 over R is bigger than 1 over RC, and this plays a role. So all those guys are suppressed, and you get four-dimensional answers. You get 1 over R.
What did you get this formula for?
Just quantum mechanics. You take the delta function and solve for the KK modes in the presence of this induced term, and calculate wave functions. So this is a wave function taken at the position of the brain.
What makes the induced term? Why is it there? The induced term.
Yeah, I was trying to argue before that if you have something which has very, very high scale, okay, on the brain. it renormalizes this term and makes it big. So
the black hole doesn't go away. It's more like it interacts with whatever is on the brain and
then shrinks. You see, if I consider some object on the brain, that's not a black hole, unless its mass is bigger than M. Planck or this MSM.
But if you bring the brain from the outside,
yes,
you bring it towards the black hole, it doesn't go away just like that.
Of course. The point is that the gravity on the brain is shielded from the strong gravity in the bulk. Because the coupling there is smaller. Sorry? No, there is no bound state. Yeah, that's a good question. So normally in like let's say in Randall Sundrum type scenario, you have a bound state, zero mode bound state, which mediates four dimensional gravity. Here there is no bound state, or there is no localized mode. You can think of this as a resonance mode. I was coming to that on the next transparency. So you can think of this as a resonance mode, which decays.
So
okay.
So the diagram is normalized on the plane wave at infinity in
crime. Right.
So you've argued that for length scale smaller than this ratio of Planck masses, we have four-dimensional gravity.
Right, exactly, yes.
But in four-dimensional gravity, we have black holes. That's a standard prediction.
Yeah, but...
Okay,
so
what is a brain hole black hole? I guess that's part of what's being asked.
Well... If you are asking me to calculate exact shape of the black hole in this model, that's a very difficult problem. Many people tried, but you know, some asymptotic forms of the shape in the bulk are calculated, and they look like if it was like pancake type, but the exact solution doesn't exist.
It's impossible to get exactly short.
Oh, then it will be fantastic. It's very important for other reasons as well, so we can discuss it later.
If you take a particle with mass bigger than M star but less than M Planck,
yes,
and start it off in the ball,
yes,
so then you agree it's going to be a black hole.
Agree.
Okay, so now we throw it toward the brain.
Right.
And just let it evolve.
Yes.
Okay. Now, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, is this going to be repelled from the brain somehow? Because it's not repelled,
horizons don't shrink.
So what is the horizon in this case, right? It defined by the G Newton, right? So I'd like to ask you, what is the G Newton in that case? And I know answer for that when I come to the brain, and I know answer for that when I'm far away from there. So probably something happens in between, so that when you come to the brain, your horizon is defined by just normal four-dimensional G Newton, right?
The horizon would be a pretty five-dimensional description of this process.
Yeah.
And in five dimensions, we know that there's a horizon and that the horizon can't suddenly go away unless it's evaporated.
And first of all, it's topologically a three-sphere. It's not going to turn into a two-sphere. So it's not going to become a four-dimensional black hole. There's a three-sphere horizon.
That's what I'm saying. It never becomes a four-dimensional black hole. It's not a black hole anymore. So it has. So if you put some. Okay. It's the same question as looking for a Schwarzschild solution. When I have a source on the brain, okay? Okay, let me take a mass which is bigger than M star, but which is located on the brain. Okay? So on the brain, that's not a black hole. But in the bulk, it is. Now I'd like to understand how this transition happens. For that, I have to know what is the shape of the Schwarzschild solution in the bulk, right? So I don't know the exact answer to that question because nobody found the exact solution for this model. Also, people tried, but some asymptotic forms of the shape of the Schwarzschild solution in the bulk are known, and they look like this pancake type structure. So that's all I can tell you about this. But that's a very interesting question of how this transition takes place. So.
But what I'm saying is that there's a general theorem, the area theorem, which guarantees that if you start with the black hole in the bulk and then move it toward the brain, the horizon is not going to disappear. The horizon cannot disappear.
But the bulk horizon will still be there. Bulk horizon, right? It's not disappearing.
So the particle hits the brain and the bulk horizon is still there?
Well, the Schwarzschild solution will have some kind of shape, right, in the bulk.
Yeah. So you agree it's a black hole in five dimensions?
Sorry?
You agree that it is a black hole?
Of course, yeah, it is a black hole in five
dimensions.
No. No, it is a black hole in the five dimension. It's obvious, right?
Does it have a large size?
It has a large size because M star is small.
I'm sure it can be smaller than the four-dimensional Planck scale. Well, sorry, no, that's...
Okay, okay. Let me ask.
Sorry, I'm
focused. The short...
The idea of this question, like, BT, well, what, can anybody define what means BT is black hole in 5 and it's not black hole in 4?
Okay.
I think all I understand is that in this picture, if you put a particle of mass m on the brain, that's not a black hole. That's not a black hole, no matter from where you look at it.
Yes.
You look at it from...
Why not? Why
it's not a black hole because gravity is weak, it has no horizon. Yeah. It's always...
It's above M star, right? Above
no, so you look at gravity. You look at that particle and it has the Schwarzschild horizon inside, right?
Four-dimensional gravity on the brain might be weak.
The whole gravity is weak.
Yeah, of course.
So this is my understanding. Maybe it's wrong, but my understanding is basically, if I take a particle, because all the KK models have suppressed wave functions on the brain, essentially the whole five-dimensional gravity is weak. It just looks four-dimensional because of this 1/r law, but the whole gravity is weak. So if I put a mass distribution which is smaller than what you would define as four-dimensional Schwarzschild radius, that is not a black hole. And
right.
It's not a black hole from no matter from where you look at it.
Sorry, is the whole gravity weak or just the components along the four?
No, the whole gravity on the brain is weak. It's like a, whatever, it's like a, because...
You have that four-dimensional Einstein term.
Yes.
Which only has the four-dimensional components.
It doesn't matter. You calculate what is the interaction between this guy and some ball guy, let's say. You can probe that, right? And you see that it's weak. The gravity on the brain is screened. But that's a very interesting question, how the transition occurs. I don't know.
You're
saying
that there is no horizon anywhere. No.
What I know, okay, maybe I'm wrong. So my understanding is that what I know for sure is that if you take this mass distribution on the brain, that's not a black hole. And that's not a black hole from no matter from where you look at it.
Sorry? If you throw something toward the brain, does it get repelled?
If it has a tension, then it's repelled, yes. If you take a normal tension full brain in co-dimension one, which is positive tension, yeah. it repels everything. Oh. It has a repulsive gravity. But here I'm considering this has.
Your brain has negative tension.
Sorry?
Does your brain have negative?
No. I consider zero tension brains because I fine tune the cosmological constant. Okay, that effect is not operative here.
Yeah, Gregory, I have a similar question.
Yes.
If I take a sun, our sun, right?
Yes.
And I gradually decrease Newtonian constant. Sorry, I gradually increase Newtonian constant. What happens at some point? It turns into a black hole or not?
Yeah, of course. Sure.
But it's not sure. That's the point. It may explode before it turns to a black hole.
Okay, that's a separate issue. Okay, wait a second. Okay.
When we ask, what is this? I have some mass distribution which is stabilized by gravity and by some repulsive potential. Unless I really know what is the internal structure, I cannot tell if I make gravity stronger than this particular object will turn into a black hole. I cannot make such a statement. So when you are making a statement that I take the particle from the brain to the bulk and it turns into a black hole, you are implicitly assuming something about structure of this particle, that it never explodes until you take in the bulk, or maybe there is no attractive potential to the brain or something like that.
You can imagine
a star which will turn into a black hole, and I can happily hook you up. I mean, the dynamite is a simple.
What point? And actually, when one says that the area can't shrink, there have to be some units there, and there's a question of whether the area should be, say, fixed in the Planck units that are locally appropriate, because the Planck scale is effectively changing as you're getting closer to it.
Right.
Also, I was just going to ask.
So you could certainly have something that gets smaller in some other units, but say is fixed in Planck units. That would be one example. And the Planck scale is changing. It takes one value out of the bulk and a different value on the brain.
It'd be the fundamental
life
scale.
Well,
that's the fundamental scale.
Well, no. Okay.
Why is it the fundamental scale? If I'm on the brain, I don't feel that scale. I feel that as a small correction. Because you can calculate let's say you calculate the Green's functions or the exact shape of the KK modes and calculate how your object on the brain feels the higher dimensional gravity, and that feels as a small correction. But what it feels may primarily is the
form. We have to be able to describe everything from a five-dimensional point of view.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
We should be able to say there's a horizon there and have this and that area in the fundamental five-dimensional
right.
unit.
Right, sure. You should be able,
including
yes.
Including the region where the brain
exactly, exactly. No question about that,
and
yes?
I think Gary has a point. It's not clear enough.
Well, it could stay constant. For example, if you have a constant area in fundamental Planck units, and as the fundamental Planck units get smaller as you go to the brain, that means the horizon will shrink.
That's right.
Yeah, otherwise, something like that, yes.
Yeah, get down close to close to the Planck size.
Well, it has to do that, right? You do calculation here, you do calculation there. So here you see that the horizon is much smaller, and you see that there you have a horizon, huge horizon, right? It has to happen something in between. So, okay.
Can I just ask, when people who are so confidently saying that the area can only go one direction, I mean, these black holes, when they get close to the brain, there's no sense in the five-dimensional case that you have an asymptotically flat space. I mean, at infinity, because you've got this big brain sitting there. The directions along the brain are completely different from the directions away. Is that at all a loophole or not?
That's definitely the reason why this phenomena takes place, but I don't know if...
last question, and then I'll
say that. I don't think that'll solve the problem.
I mean, if you believe in the entropy, I think you're saying that way, you just can't lose.
You can't lose states.
But you can buy like holographic principle then, because you have this tiny little particle on the brain, much smaller than the bulk. Radius, which is carrying large entropy.
Right. That's
his induction. Yeah. If I have an astrophysical black hole, which is huge,
yes.
And then I gradually now, instead of decreasing Newtonian constant,
yes.
Should not the horizon shrink a little bit?
Yes, of course.
Then why are you making the statement horizons do not shrink? They shrink if you change the strength of
If the constant changes, it changes, right?
Provide a background with a slowly rolling scalar field.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
Physically
real.
Well, maybe we should
go ahead. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so I don't know. How long can I still go? Yeah, but
we started late.
I started late, and I hope this doesn't count. I mean. Okay, I'll try to skip some stuff, but.
3:30.
Yeah, 3:30. I'll try to make
discussions. Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Yeah.
So the second question, second kind of interpretation of the same phenomena was related to Andrei's question. So this exchange with all KK infinite number of KK modes actually can be replaced by exchange of one effective graviton, which looks like massive graviton, and that can even be seen from the spectral representation for the Green's function, which the Green's function itself is here, and the spectral representation looks like this. Of course, in the limit, which we can check when RC goes to infinity, it has to reduce to normal four-dimensional massless graviton, as it does, because it's delta function in that. And if you don't take that limit, that looks like some effective unstable mode. And the physics is very simple. In that language, physics is very simple. You have source here, you have source there. So you exchange this metastable graviton. If that source is very far away, and you send this metastable graviton to that source, and if the distance to the source is bigger than the lifetime of the graviton, it decays into the bulk, so it cannot mediate four-dimensional gravity. And vice versa, if the source is closer than the lifetime, so you mediate this graviton effectively as a four-dimensional graviton, so it doesn't have time to decay, so that's why you see four-dimensional gravity there.
Did someone work out the gravitational propagator in this case exactly?
Yeah, we did. For the zero tension brain.
For zero?
Yes. I mean, okay. Here is a part of the propagator. You can use propagator to derive the potential. And the potential, this is already reduced to three momenta because of the static potential. And this is a normal piece, four-dimensional piece, which is here due to this induced term. And if you didn't include this induced term, then you'd get just P, which gives rise to just five-dimensional interactions. And that also shows you this crossover scale. So let me, before I proceed, So this is a summary of what I've said before, that it, without induced term, the gravity is strong, and it's 1 over r squared, and so it's five-dimensional. And after we included the term, at distances less than rc, it has this four-dimensional form with normal M Planck, which we are measuring, and that's fine. And the effective description is that this induced term shields four-dimensional observers from this KK modes. And this is opposite to any normal KK compactification, because in KK compactification, what you see is at large distances you see 1 over r, and at short distances change the regime, but here it's exactly upside down. And now something about numbers. RC, this crossover scale in five-dimensional model is related to M Planck squared and M star cubed. And if you claim that, I mean, you have to claim that RC is of order of the Hubble scale or bigger, because before that we know gravity, then you get a restriction of M star that it should be smaller than 100 MeV. And in six-dimensional theory, in six and higher, you can do exactly the same exercise. And the expression for RC is a little different. Powers are different. And you see that in order to achieve RC at 10 to the 28 centimeters, you have to have M star at 10 to the minus 3. And that is provided that you include higher dimensional operators here, which are very important, which are suppressed by 1 over M star. So what this model does is it predicts simultaneous modification of gravity at short distances below inverse M star and at astronomical distances at the Hubble scale. So below those, well, gravity is different. But in between, we observe four-dimensional gravity.
This is not due to that propagator effect. This is not the same effect then as this. If you look at the Green's function with the kinetic term, just the kinetic term on the brain, which is larger than the kinetic term in the bulk, that doesn't give this. You're saying some effect.
The lower bound, right? The short distance modification. That's what you are asking about?
That doesn't give this scale RC, does it?
It does. If you do calculation accurately, in higher dimensions there is the issue of singularities, because in codimension one the Green's function at the origin is not divergent, so you can do calculation even without regularizing brain or without including higher dimensional operators, and that gives you the same answer. In higher codimensions you cannot do that because of the singularity. Once you introduce higher dimensional operators, they smooth out for you those singularities that we'll show exactly. And when you do that, you'll get this answer for RC. Okay. So let me, I was gonna mention some let me mention one cosmological application of that. Here we're still working with a theory in which big cosmological constant is fine-tuned. So we say we don't know how it's solved. And nevertheless, let me address the question, can this modification at large distance have some use? And it seems that it can. It can explain, for instance, the present-day acceleration of the universe without having the cosmological constant. And the reason is because the R term which we wrote here, which we induced R term, that, from the point of view of this bulk theory, looks like a cosmological constant. And it just accelerates, and if RC is chosen at the Hubble scale, that's the only parameter you have in a theory, so you automatically get the right acceleration for your four-dimensional world. And you get in four dimensions, you get four-dimensional decider without having cosmological constant. And the standard equation for the Friedmann's equation is of course modified because the cosmology is different, and just to compare the standard sum of the omegas which we have in normal Friedmann cosmology, in our case you get this kind of contribution. This is a contribution of curvature, and this is contribution because of the presence of this extra term, and these are just normal omegas which you consider in all the cases. So it's modified. It makes, let's say if you fit supernova data, it makes a different prediction for the matter density in the universe. It gives you a little bit lower number than than the standard prediction. Yes?
When you're talking about cosmology, I mean, yes. Before I thought the bulk was basically flat,
yes.
The brain was basically flat, you were doing linearized perturbations.
Right.
So now you're putting a Friedman metric on the brain.
Yes.
What are you doing about the bulk?
Nothing. It's flat. So
the bulk is still flat.
Because that has to do... Bulk is flat as long as I fine-tune the cosmological constant on the brain. Because that means that my brain has no tension. Okay?
So this is the induced metric on the brain is Roberts and Walker.
Yes.
And that's induced from the bulk metric, which is flat, and it's because of the brain's motion.
Sorry, say it again.
You're still matching, right? The
metric of course,
the brain
yeah.
Has to match.
Right, right.
So yeah. The brain is moving in flat space?
No. Brain is stable. Okay, brain is stable. Okay, you get some metric in the bulk when you put some normal Friedmanian cosmology on the brain, of course. Okay, yeah. But it you can do general coordinate transformation so that it goes to the Minkowski space and this brain starts running like in normal, like in Ipsilon Sequoia solution, for instance. It's identical. Only difference is that I'm not including the tension on the brain. Okay?
So yeah. Only a Friedman universe embedded in a higher dimensional flat space
time. It is, yes.
So it's just moving in the middle of everything's flat.
Yes.
You're saying that there's no jump in the extrinsic curvature.
On the brain, there is a jump of extrinsic curvature.
Okay.
On the brain.
Because there are generalized matching conditions.
Yes, and they satisfy all the matching conditions.
Satisfy them.
Yes. So I was going to mention that then people did more precise analysis of supernova in that model, and it seems that it fits the data. So. I can discuss now the fate of these regestates. Why, if I put in the bulk the light regestates, why they are not dangerous for us? Or I can go ahead and move to this cosmological constant problem, finalize that, and then discuss the stringy issues. Or I don't know what's the preference or not discuss. Okay, yeah. So far we fine-tuned that constant, and now let's say what happens if we put back tension, and that is called in epsilon four in our case, and we say that it can be supersymmetry on a brain which makes it TV, so that's why it has to be. At least bigger than TV. And we don't assume that there is some mechanism in four dimensions which can take care of that. Okay, we say that let's live with that. And let's see what happens. So the answers I'll be giving is the following. First of all, I have to show that this four-dimensional behavior of gravity, which I discussed in the flat space, still persists in a case when I put a tension, when I curve the bulk very, very strongly because of the presence of this tension. And the answer to that would be that the crossover scale now is determined by the least value between RC as it was defined before and the gravitational radius of the brain. Okay, so that means that in order to have normal four-dimensional gravity at observable distances, I have to make gravitational radius of the brain huge, and it's not like I'm making it by hands, because that's natural, because if the tension is huge, it's much bigger than the scale M star, so the gravitational radius is big. And then we give some arguments. So far this formula is conjecture, because it seems that in order to say that that's true, we have to do some numerical calculations. Analytic solutions seem to be very hard to obtain. But we give some evidence that the expression for the acceleration rate on the brain is related to the vacuum energy density like this, which is basically the inverse gravitational radius there. And of course, for n equals 1, which is a five-dimensional case, it coincides with a known relation, and it doesn't solve anything because If n equals 1, then this is minus 1. This flips upside down, and the acceleration rate is proportional to the energy density. So that model doesn't solve the problem. However, for n bigger than 2, the relation is flipped. So one could hope that it does solve the problem. And before I go to details, let's say for the just to keep in mind the numbers, let's say for n equals 4 and for TV size energy density and this small m star, the Hubble rate will be consistent with the present day Hubble rate.
Sorry, when you're saying numerical, are you fitting onto this? Your numerical results onto these values of exponents and powers of scales? You say you cannot calculate this analytically.
No. What I've said is I cannot calculate that original formula analytically because I cannot find exact analytic solution for this source. But assuming that formula is correct, for which I'll give you some arguments now, then these numbers give you this acceleration rate, which is consistent with
right.
the, yes.
I'm asking the first formula.
Right, I can derive it analytically, yes, because solution doesn't exist analytically. Okay, let's proceed step by step. First, let's look at the Einstein equations. And the only difference now is that we had the bulk term, and the difference now is that we include this induced term, and that's a static source. So we are considering the simplest case when the brain is not charged and it has some tension. And let's look for the static solutions, which have four-dimensional Poincaré invariance. So the statement is that if the static solution exists in a theory without induced term, then it does exist in a theory with induced term as well, because on that background, this term vanishes, because our four-dimensional world volume is flat. So then you can use the solution which exists, and the solution looks like these Wolf factors A, B, and C have a form 1 minus rho g over rho, where rho g was a gravitational radius defined on the previous transparency, and alpha, beta, and gamma are corresponding numbers for A, B, and C, which depend on dimensionality, on the number of codimensions. Okay, so this will be example on which I'd like to study gravity fluctuations and to make sure that the four-dimensional gravity still exists at the distances at which we want it to do. So we consider these four-dimensional fluctuations at mu nu plus h mu nu. And we do the same computation. We just write down the Schrödinger equation for the KK modes. Okay. It turns out that even if you have very general expression for this, even if you don't specify A and B and C, you can transform the equation for this KK mode in some standard Schrödinger equation, but in some kind of weird variables. So that's what we do.
So, yes. Excuse me, this metric has a horizon?
It has singularity, and I'll discuss that. It has a singularity at zero, but that's artificial because we took the singular source, and that can be smoothed out by the smoothing of the brain, but it has a singularity at rho g as well.
Singularity at rho g?
Yes. Uh-huh. But that will be the crucial issue. So okay. That's why I'm saying that, of course, this solution exists explicitly, But the solution we are looking for, which we think wouldn't have any singularity, it cannot be obtained analytically at the moment. Okay.
Yes. Are you looking for something with 40 Poincaré invariance rather than the Sitter invariance?
Yeah. Eventually, we'll come to the De Sitter. Yeah. Right. So at the moment, I would like to analyze what is the effect of the tension on this four-dimensional gravity on the brain, whether it's still there or not. So, without skipping those technical details, when you write the Schrödinger equation for those fluctuations, let's now compare the Schrödinger equation in a theory which has a tension and the Schrödinger equation in a theory which doesn't have a tension, and let's see what is the effect of the brain tension in these equations. Okay, and delta V stands here for the difference of the potential which appears in that Schrödinger equation for those two cases. So you can think of that this potential exists in the warped case, but does not exist in the flat case. So that's what makes a difference. And obviously, you can trust solution at some region where it's valid, and in that region it behaves something like this. And on top of that, we know that when it approaches the position of the brain, which is at zero, it should be negative because this is an attractive brain in higher codimension. And even if you take that solution and accept it all the way down to distances of order rho equals zero, it goes like this. Of course, we don't exactly know how would the actual solution go, but this doesn't matter for our calculation. The crucial point is that the maximal value of this potential is defined by 1 over rho g squared, because that's the only parameter in the expression for the potential. Okay, so that's a maximal value you can get. So that indicates that all the KK modes, which are below here in mass, they'll be suppressed by they'll be suppressed additionally compared to the flat case. Okay. However, all the KK modes which are above, they don't care about the presence of this potential.
Are you looking between the singularities?
Yes, between the singularities, exactly.
You're not worried about boundary conditions at the singularity?
Right now, I'm not, but I'm going to be doing that, yes. Right now, I'm testing what is the effect of the tension, in terms of the presence of the KK modes. Of course, boundary condition will project out some of them, will leave the others, but it doesn't matter for my purposes here.
Can I ask a sort of general question?
Yes.
So you're going to show us that there's a Poincaré invariant solution in the presence of this epsilon 4.
Well, that was already shown, right? But what I'm going to say is that is not really. I mean, if that solution was a physically acceptable solution, then that and the unique solution, that would be a solution of the cosmological constant problem, right? Because you started with epsilon 4, which is non-zero, and you get something static, and you have four-dimensional.
Well, I have a question about that.
Yes.
So that's what I want to come back to.
Right.
Could you show that the same equations also admit solutions that don't have Poincaré invariants but have de Sitter or anti de Sitter?
Well, that's what I mentioned. If it was unique, then that would be the solution. But what I'm going to argue is that the physical solution is not really flat. It will have some, it has to have some de Sitter on it.
And you argue that it's impossible to vary the magnitude of the de Sitter cosmological constant or define anti-de Sitter solutions with the same.
No, I'll argue that only non-singular solution will be that one with de Sitter.
So you say there's a unique de Sitter solution with a fixed.
That would be the conjecture, yeah. Yeah. So going back to you're distracting the structure all the time. So, sorry. So going back to this. KK modes. So what we found is that KK modes with mass less than that are suppressed. And if rho g is huge, let's say in our case rho g is of order of present day horizon, we don't care about that because these states don't contribute into the four dimensional exchange anyway. Or let's say one can do the simple exercise. Consider rho g which is a bit bigger than RC or even nearby. It doesn't matter. So then we have this band of the KK modes which effectively contribute to four-dimensional interactions between inverse rho g and inverse RC. And let's say rho g approaches RC, what happens? Effectively, we are left with one massive graviton, and the mass of this graviton is inverse rho g or inverse RC, which is the same. And this is extremely small mass. Its Compton wavelength is just the Hubble size. So that is fine. That mediates normal four-dimensional gravity. Okay?
I have a question about uniqueness.
Yes.
I mean, it's like, what you are, the statement is that it's unique.
No,
neighborhood of the deformed, you have the singular supposition, then you are deforming it by assuming the center on the ground.
Right.
And then there is some neighborhood around the singular solution.
Yes.
So the deformation is not singular anymore. And that's unique in certain neighborhoods, but. There can be some crazy solution which is there, completely crazy.
What do you mean crazy solution?
Well,
You're talking about unphysical solution, like shrinking solution, for instance, or something like that? Or what?
I don't understand this thing about uniqueness, because unique among which class of solutions?
No, unique in a sense that you don't have continuous family of solutions,
yeah,
okay?
That's not uniqueness, you can have other solutions somewhere else.
The discrete, you can have discrete choice, yeah, sure.
But I don't get that.
I don't think he was worried about.
Well, I was asking whether, if you're going to claim the cosmological constant is zero, one way to diagnose it is to say that among maximally symmetric solutions, you only have Poincaré one.
Or
if in the same system you have a Poincaré de Sitter and anti de Sitter,
right.
It would mean that whatever you had thought was the cosmological constant was in fact not, and there was another parameter in the system that was controlling
right.
The cosmological constant. So that happens often in such systems.
Yes.
All right. But I mean, what you would need is the first thing is that. It's unique in some neighborhood, so there is no
right.
Right.
Otherwise. So this is a page which some results of this I mentioned already. So we started with a non-zero epsilon, and we got a static solution, and it had four-dimensional gravity. And in a normal case, if you prove the uniqueness of that, you would say that's a solution of the cosmological constant problem. However, it's not yet. For the obvious reasons, because it's very, very hard to make sense of this singularity at rho g. Okay, singularity at origin is obviously related to the fact that we take a delta function source. If you smooth that out, that should be fine. But singularity here, it's not clear what does smooth that. And let's see what kind of examples are existing which are singular. Yes.
Is it clear that the singularity that's another horizon?
Sorry, say it again.
Clear that it's a singular. I mean, in a regular black hole solution.
Right. Okay.
It looks like, at.
Yeah, I got it. Right. In this.
And at R star, you don't have singularity.
Right. In this particular case, you can check that this is really a singularity. In this particular case, okay? It has divergent volume element and it's naked singularity. So. Yeah, I would be very happy if it was horizon. So.
And it's time-like.
It's time-like, yes.
And the region between the singularities is an ordinary. Lorentz metric, because the factor 1 minus rho, I mean, changes sign, so the powers, usually time becomes space-like, and radial direction becomes time-like, and
yeah.
All that stuff inside. That doesn't happen.
That doesn't happen, yeah. Right. Yes. So let me I'd like to gain some intuition from the solutions which are known. Let's say one can consider global or local string in four dimensions, or a global string in six dimensions. So Cohen and Kaplan found solutions for global strings in 4D and 6. I think in NED, right? NED, yeah. But the analysis I'm going to talk about was done in 4D and 6D. And those solutions have singularities at finite distance. And then subsequently it was also argued that although the static solutions exist, which is singularity finite distance, there also exists inflating solution, which inflates along the word volume, which basically smooths out the singularity. And of course it's unique because it's supposed to smooth out singularity at this finite distance. And that was done for global string in this paper, and for local string in this paper. And when we talk about local string, this is a local string with super heavy local string, which has a mass which is bigger than the corresponding Planck scale, because the local string which has a mass less, it just has deficit angle and no singularity whatsoever. So the conclusion of this analysis is that once you have this kind of singularity, you can deform the solution so that it inflates along the word volume, and it removes this singularity. In simple words, the requirement that it to be static is too much of a requirement on the solution, and that's why it's not possible to satisfy Einstein equation at the position of singularity. But once you let it inflate, it smooths out the singularity. So I'm gonna come back to this question in addresses in more details, but. At the moment, let me check what happens. What would be
the horizon? Was the curvature blowing up at the horizon?
No, it's a horizon. It's a normal horizon.
So then, if you change this continuous parameter a little bit away from this, what do you get? The horizon suddenly.
No, you exactly, yeah.
horizon?
Yeah, we don't know what happens beyond the horizon. Yeah, it's gonna be eventually it's gonna be geometrically incomplete. Yes, because we can only make statements before the horizon. But that's the issue. That's why the reason why we cannot do that because we don't have analytic solution. I mean, we're trying to do some numerical calculations, but it's very hard to obtain any exact expression. So let me study what happens if that's the case in the present situation. So we let lambda 4 equals some h squared, and then you can calculate what is this h, but the calculation is tricky because it involves now the fact that we have this induced term on the brain. Namely, once we have induced term, that induced term from the point of view of the tension is just renormalization of tension. Actually, it's some subtraction from the tension. And the gravitational radius of the brain is not the same as it was in the flat case. And one should take into account that. And this will give us some extra solutions, which I'll discuss later. So, assuming this relation, let me check the five-dimensional case for which the exact solution is known, and then let's go ahead and make some predictions for higher-dimensional case. And in a five-dimensional case, when you solve, you discover just normal inflation on a domain wall with a Hubble which is proportional to the energy density, and it agrees with the exact solution. And in higher dimensional case, the physics is really different. And as I mentioned, because of the presence of this induced term, you have this extra solution, but it's bad actually in this case. It's bad because the solution which would have without the induced term has this small Hubble parameter, which is inversely proportional to the epsilon 4. On the other hand, the other solution looks like normal four-dimensional inflation. And obviously, now we have a discrete choice between these two solutions. So we expect that both of these solutions smooth out this singularity, turning to the horizon. And we have a discrete choice, and we have to say that we live in this world and not in this world. Okay, so let me go back to this singularity issue and try to present more careful arguments. So it's not clear that the reason why we expect this inflating solution is following. So singular solution is static, but whatever smooths out that singularity, it's not clear that the same stuff does not introduce the new contribution to the cosmological constant problem, right? And the way one can probe this was discussed in literature in different in relation with a different model, but we can do the same here. Namely, we can introduce the probe brain at the position of the singularity, and see if that's the case. If the smoothing out of the singularity requires introduction of the new energy, which would be considered in that case a fine tuning, right? So let me put the probe brain there. Actually, this is some kind of wrap brain on this singularity. And once I do that, the space between the core and the singularity and this position is compact. Okay. So let me now go to distances which are bigger than the size of this, or bigger than rho g. So then we have to have low energy four-dimensional description only in terms of the zero mode, because that's the only mode which remains at those distances. So let's write down the Einstein equation for that zero mode, and let's see what it tells us. So this term comes from the basically compactification. And this term is the induced term, and that multiplies the four-dimensional cosmological constant. Then we had epsilon 4, which was a tension on the brain. In addition, we got this Casimir energy because now we made space compact. And we put this T probe. So now you see that you satisfy Einstein equation here. In a sense, you remove that guy. However, at the price of introducing this tension, and in order to keep this solution static, you have to say that T probe is minus epsilon 4 minus rho g, then h is 0, but this is a fine tuning. On the other hand, another lesson which one learns from here is as follows. If you don't fine-tune this tension and make it of order of the natural order in your theory, which is this one, okay, you'll get some inflation. But the rate of inflation you can calculate is this one, because this equation tells you that exactly. Okay. Of course, these arguments won't tell you anything what happens beyond this point, as you asked, beyond the horizon. And in order to have an answer to that, one really needs an analytic solution. And we don't have it yet, of course. But numerically, that should be possible to do. Actually, the cases I mentioned before with this four-dimensional global and local string and six-dimensional local string are also done numerically, because analytic solution is hard to obtain in that case as well. So conclusion. I don't know. Should I put conclusions, or should we go ahead with the string range states? Or
maybe you can just vote. What's the vote? 10 minutes.
10 minutes for okay. I don't know.
You can kind of talk about it in the string session.
Okay. Well, actually, it's not like extensive. I just wanted to mention the idea, so you know, maybe it's not worth mentioning at all. So I don't know. We can discuss privately. Oh, okay. Let me just summarize, and I can just say what we did in the string section. So there are two issues. One is the issue which is related to the bottom-up approach, and of course there is the issue of top-down approach. So in a bottom-up approach, you can ask the question, okay, here is this M star, which is very, very low in the bulk. And if that's a string theory which softens everything above M star, then you have to expect to have these regestates at the same mass. And how come we are still safe from those regestates? And we are safe from the regestates the same way we are safe from the strong gravity, namely, if you write down the couplings of the regestates to the matter on the brain, the loop renormalizes these couplings on the brain, and the couplings become weak. So when you take into account this weakness of the coupling, you sum up all the regestates, you'll see that your processes break down not at M star, but at the average value between M star and M Planck, which is TV. So you expect the effect of regestates and TV. Yes?
Sorry, so another question along those lines is, if you take your charged states, you might expect those would have little excitations above them, spaced by 10 to the minus 3 EV, because those would be like the little open strings.
Yeah, it depends how they are coupled to them, right?
Those would be gauge charged, because your brain states are gauge charged.
Yes.
So they wouldn't decouple with gravitational strength. They would couple with gauge strength.
Yeah, but those can be, you see, if in the region where I'm getting the standard model fields from some non-perturbative stringy stuff, if G string is extremely small, I expect that those states couple very, very weakly to us.
So you want those to have a gap that's much larger than 10
right.
minus 3.
Yes, effectively.
Are you taking into account that those states may not be in like regular supply, the number of density of states may increase?
Yeah, exactly. So that's a major point. I mean, the density of states increase exponentially. And it would be a catastrophe to couple to the exponential number of states. And we sum up all the exponents, and nevertheless we see that you see effect. That's why you see the effect of the states at TV. If it was like a polynomial increase, you wouldn't see them, you know, all the way up to M Planck maybe. And the second issue about the, you know, top-down approach, we just have the naive idea. I don't know, maybe it might be wrong or right, so probably experts are here and they can tell us or I don't know, advice about this. So probably this kind of scenarios might be realized in a case when you have profile of the dilaton changing, because you want to have M star in the bulk, and then you want to have G string which is very low on the brain, which would provide for you this high scale. And simultaneously, you want to have, let's say, G string equals to 1 in the bulk. So those kind of scenarios exist without, of course, without the profile of the dilaton. And some of the scenarios are like this. So what I'm saying is that separation is chaos is already here, and the idea of the separation of the perturbative string states from the non-perturbative string states, which give to your standard model, is already here. The only point is that this is not exactly applicable to our model because we want more than that. We want a kind of profile of the dilaton, which is, let's say, which gives you G-string equals to, okay, roughly 1 here, and G-string is very small here. So that...
Where's the opposite there, right?
In what sense? Yeah, because G-string, yeah, right, yes. Right. But the idea of separation, yeah, something like this, I don't know. So for maybe you know some... Okay, I'll stop here.